The Paths to Parenthood podcast is designed to support those needing to use a donor to build their family. I'm Becky, also known as Defining Mum, and I'm also the founder of Paths to Parenthood. I'm the mum to three amazing girls, all thanks to egg donation.
And I'm Hayley King, the founder of All Things Donor Conception. I'm both a donor conceived person and, in a twist of fate, the parent of donor conceived children with my lovely wife.
Our aim is to open up conversations about this incredible route to parenthood, focusing on some of the nuances and complexities that it can bring.
Our hope is to provide different perspectives, information, reflection, and validation as we openly discuss different topics, share stories, and ask you for your input.
We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back to the Paths to Parenthood podcast. And today we're going to be speaking with the lovely Aquia, who has joined us all the way from the United States and has got up very early to speak with us both. So welcome, Aquia. Welcome to the podcast. And yeah, firstly, just wanted to say hello and learn a little bit more about you. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your family, first of all, if you could.
Thank you, Becky and Hayley, for having me here. Absolutely my pleasure to be able to do this. So to jump into it, a bit about me, as Hayley has already introduced, I am Aquia Ankara, a mom to three girls, all born through sperm donor and my last two through surrogacy. It took us 14 years to have our first one after just going through a lot of surgeries to do with fibroids on my part, and my husband thought he was really straight. And come to realize, I think it might be in that 12th year was when the doctor hinted that my husband might need to have more, you know, look deeper at his sperm analysis, as well as to, he basically hinted that it was so bad that it didn't seem very helpful, but, you know, gave us options. And that was quite a big blow because I felt that at this point that I had been fixed, so to speak, because of my multiple fibroid surgeries. By the time we were talking to the fertility doctor, I think I had had about four fibroid surgeries. I had just finished my final one. And so I thought, you know, I'm done. And then come to find out that now we have the sperm piece to also deal with. And so that was quite a big blow to us. But nonetheless, we also felt like we had to move fast because, you know, when you go for your consultations, they always show you this chart of like, yeah, okay, so at this age, you're peaking your eggs and then it declines. And so for me, as the prospective mom, I was really worried about that and felt I didn't have much time. And so for me, moving to donor was like a quicker best alternative, so that none of us lose our genetic connection versus going through surgery with the chance that it might not work at all, and then having to restart all over again. And so that was quite a tough one for my husband to swallow. And there was a lot of back and forth. But yeah, eventually we did that. And that led to the birth of our amazing daughter, Blair, who during her delivery, that's when we ended up with several complications. We realized I had a placenta incretor during her delivery. Her delivery was a scheduled C-section birth. And so that was an amazing thing, to be honest. Looking back, it was the best decision ever. And of course, they factored my age. And because I was at that point, you'd say I'm probably well advanced in maternal age at that point too. And so they factored my age, the fact that I had had multiple surgeries and would not allow me to go full term. And so at 37 weeks was when that C-section birth was scheduled, and we went there thinking it was going to be a normal delivery, and only to find out that I was going to end up with an instant hysterectomy right after them taking Blair, my oldest one, out. So with that, the birth was a joy because I was narrating the story parts of it to somebody yesterday, I think, and I said my husband was recording, and I could remember whenever I watched a video hearing when the doctor jumped on the phone to consult with, I guess, the top surgeon of what the next course of action was. And she came rushing back to me. I looked at me and said, we're going to have to put you to sleep because you're bleeding to death. And I remember that, and then the commotion, and my husband was told to take the baby out of the room to the NICU to get her sugar levels up. And so all recording stopped at that point. until this day, even when I watch it, I still have chills.
It's very traumatic. Mm. It's a hugely traumatic experience to go through.
Yeah. Yes. And it brings the whole thing back to life. But so we did have the hysterectomy. I woke up hours later and realized they had pints of blood, and I asked what happened, and they told me it was going to be just in case I needed more blood. My recovery took, typically in America, they keep you here for 2 days. After a C-section birth, I think I was there for 6 days, which was quite unusual, 7 days, more like 6 nights recovery. And like most parents, first-time parents, when they were releasing me from the hospital, I was crying because I felt I was being thrown out there into the world to take care of this baby. And I don't know if we're going to be able to do it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So after major surgery as well. So that is huge.
We literally clinged on to the very last second when they were like, you can no longer be here.
We're going to kick you out.
How are we going to take care of this little human? We came home and had to start talking about the whole process with family, what had happened, the trauma. And of course, I was referred to a therapist. And so I started seeing the therapist. I think it was probably about 3 weeks after the birth. But the amazing part in all of this was literally, I think, 2 weeks after the birth, I was still telling my husband and I were just having a discussion about what a beautiful experience that whole process was. And, you know, I told him, I was like, I've actually thought of having another child. And he just couldn't believe himself. And it was just me and him. We were driving back roads, having just a relaxing conversation. And he was telling me how he had been contemplating that, but did not know how to ask, considering all that we had gone through. And so I was like, what about surrogacy? He actually first was like, you know, I haven't even thought about adoption. I was like, well, we do still have embryos, so why don't we try surrogacy instead? And he was like, great. And so that led us to the path of me researching on surrogacy, trying to find out more about it and talking to people, and then just putting it out there. Whenever people came to visit me to see the baby, I would narrate my story, whether they solicited for it or not, and end with, so I'm looking for a surrogate. Do you know anybody?
Yeah. Blair, so your first was Blair, wasn't it? Your first born. So how old was, so really little when you first started looking at your other options for another child, was it?
Yes, I would literally say 3 weeks after her birth.
Very soon, you just knew.
Yeah, I just knew. And, you know, surrogacy was one of the things you had always heard about that through celebrities, but never knew anybody regular who had done it or did not think it was attainable, because it's only celebrities you hear about.
Yeah, I can imagine as well that it was so final, that operation you had to have, the hysterectomy, that you were probably there going, right, okay, what's my next hope? Like, where can I potentially put my energy now, knowing that I want to have another, I want to give them a sibling? And it's amazing that you came to that so quickly. But did you have any sort of wobbles around that? Because I imagine, obviously, it's a kind of two different experiences. One, it was very traumatic, your birth, and you probably wouldn't want to go through that again. But there's also that loss of the ability to carry a pregnancy at the same time. So how did you get your head around having to explore that surrogacy route? Or was it quite an easy decision for you?
It honestly was a very easy decision. I think, again, just being aware that was an option just made me feel very much at peace. But not knowing where to start or how to start was the tricky part. And what I did was I called my fertility doctor and I was like, hey, so this is what happened to me. Because I remember even right after the birth, the clinic emailed me and was like, send pictures and everything. And I did that and told them how I was so grateful. And I said, but I'm also really thinking of a second child. And I quickly hinted on them that I'm coming back really quick and we need to talk about what my options are. I actually think within the month, I emailed the doctor and I was like, so yes, this happened to me during delivery and I know surrogacy is probably my next option. So can we talk about that?
Yeah.
And so I called them and I was like, so where do I start? And they were like, well, we do have surrogacy services. It's free in our clinic, but there's a waiting list. It takes forever, but you can contact such and such a person. We've known her to do one-offs type of surrogacy journeys and see. And so this person I contacted was like my main source. I scheduled something with, I remember it like yesterday, I was breastfeeding Blair and I'm talking to this woman on the phone about another child. Mind you, I was going through counseling as well at that time. And so I feel like whenever I look back, I feel like this was part of probably my healing process.
Yeah.
Because I didn't dwell so much on it and focus so much on the fact that I no longer can carry. I really didn't hop on it for too long. I cried the day it happened. I talked about it with friends, but I think part of it might be my personality. If it's broken, let's fix it and let's move on.
Yeah. And you'd already had so many other hurdles along the way with fibroids and then finding out about your husband and then needing to use a donor. So I can imagine you almost expect something to go wrong, don't you? And then you're like, right, okay, well, how do we fix this? I think it's part of that infertility journey. But just before we go down the surrogacy, I just want to go back to the donor side of things and your husband processing that and you doing that. And how did that go around choosing a donor and what sort of different emotions did the two of you have around that?
That was a very, very hard one. There was a lot of anger from my husband to accept it, saying, no child of mine that is not genetically connected to me would come to this house. And I was like, I guess that means we would have to go our separate ways. I think by the time that option was given to us, you know, when you're just tired of going through so much, it's by this time, it's been over 12 years, right? Mm-hmm. Surgeries and lots of discussions and lots of doctor visits. And then you're just told, this is it. And you're just like, why should I sit around again? Let's do it. So for me, it was a quick, easy decision. And partly maybe selfishly on my part, they're still genetically going to be connected to me. Maybe the underlining thing was that, I don't know. But for him, it was a huge process. And there was a lot of angry conversations about what this meant for our future. And ultimately, he agreed that we should take that route, but told me he was not going to participate in choosing the donor.
Yeah, I've heard that before, actually, with other couples, I think, at that stage. And I think in an ideal world, like Becky and I, we talk a lot about people getting the support and making, you know, these decisions in complete harmony. But the realism of it is that it doesn't always happen like that. And I was just interested, with your husband, you said it was like a process. Did he have any support in that, obviously, other than with yourself? Was there any like counselling or anything offered or anything to help him talk through what his maybe concerns and things were?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No. Blows my mind.
It does. Yeah.
And I was having this discussion with him yesterday, Sunday, about where he is in the process. And I actually told him, you need to join the Path to Parent Hub man support group.
Yeah.
Because your anxiety is very valid, which, you know, just like most donor conceived kids, right? We all go back and forth in the emotions. Today's a great day.
I think there's something with men as well, and not to stereotype too much, but we hear it quite commonly that men don't feel as able to talk or open up. And I mean, we always point to Sean Nakadnakers, who is on Instagram, and he's sort of shared his experience of becoming a dad through sperm donation. But there are so many feelings and like genetic loss. It's something, it's even though there's so much joy that would have grown around his grief, it's still there. And it's those anxieties around, am I a legitimate parent? Will they see me? How will they feel? Will they feel differently towards me? And I did a reel recently where it was kind of like, this is the irrational part of my brain creating these anxieties, and actually the reality is never as I feared. So but it is so hard. And I think if you've not got anybody to talk to, or even just to read something that someone's written, or listen to a podcast or something, just to utilize those feelings is so important. But would you say how has he been since the girls have been born, and how has he bonded with them and kind of built that relationship? I very much think that once you're in it, it's very different to the thoughts of it at the very beginning.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with Blair being born, like I said, it felt like magic to him. Of course, he got to do skin to skin first before me. So they became instant BFFs. And I think it just melted all his anxiety and fear away. And that's why he was also thinking, right, of having another child within a few weeks. It was like day and night what he perceived would happen, how he thought he would feel, was the opposite. It was very beautiful to see him bond with her. She was his world. She was his world. And it was so crazy that he was the one, like I said, he was the one saying, I was thinking about this all along. I just didn't know how to bring it up because of the trauma you had just gone through. So for me to hear that was so refreshing, and to know that he's fully in.
Yeah.
Of course, he was fully in after we did that. You know, he was in the process, right? But it was also the pushback of choosing the donor and all of that. But once we went beyond that, he was there for surgeries. He was there for transfer. You know, he was there giving me the shots, helping me through nausea. But still in the back of my mind, I was still was somewhat doubtful if he was still really going to be there. That was my fear.
Yeah.
Because those events were replaying in my head, the discussions and the raw emotions. And so deep down in me, that was my fear too. But after her birth, when he just came out and just said that, I just knew that was something I needed not to worry about anymore. It was a big healing moment for both of us. And if at all anything, it brought us really close to a whole different level that I hadn't imagined.
You've both been through so much and had to give up so much in this journey, and it's amazing to hear how it's actually brought you closer together, because I think it can actually tear some couples apart. And it is a real journey, and like you say, you said it earlier, Hayley, you're never in the same emotional place at the same time. You always seem to be differing. I'm really curious to hear how you got on with actually choosing the sperm donor on your own, and what factored into those decisions there, because obviously you would have been very mindful of your husband, but how did you make that decision on, because it is a big decision when you're thinking about choosing a donor, and to do that on your own is a huge thing as well.
Yes. So I did go in there looking for someone just like my husband.
Yeah.
when I logged in there, and some of the things that you all have heard, is it is really true. There is a huge lack of Black male donors in a space. It was California Cryo, and out of over 500, I only had 25.
Really?
Wow.
Black donors. Yeah. So my pool wasn't that big to choose from. And it was pretty quick and easy, because there weren't a whole lot to go through. But in the back of my mind, I wanted somebody that was just like my husband, personality-wise. Probably, and I felt very fortunate when the donor I saw, I felt even matched family resemblance, you know, father's profession, his dad's profession matched exactly my father-in-law's profession. I listened to his voice. I listened to his interview. I found very similar cultural backgrounds, which was so rare. That was when I was logging in, I was not expecting to find anyone remotely close to African descent. And you might say, well, African-Americans are African descent, but you know, we have to think about the history of African-Americans and how we came to be. And then there is those that are straight from Africa today that would say they came off a plane, and I did not expect to find that first generation African.
Yeah.
And so that was like an instant connection. Wait, he is from, we're all from the same region in Africa. What are the odds? Father, yeah. His father and my father-in-law have the same profession. And, you know, reading about his personality and listening, and I was like, he sounds like my husband.
If you shown your husband the profile since, or has he been more curious about it? Because, like, I know you mentioned he wasn't involved at the selection. But, yeah, is that kind of changed as well as you've obviously started to have your children?
Yeah, yes, yes. As kids start asking more questions.
Yeah.
And Blair, before she turned 6, had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Who the donor is. And it made me go back to revisit all the audio and the
It's great that you have that as well, though, because I know a lot of the US banks, they have a lot of information, potentially, whether, you know, like you say, voice recordings, some have photographs and profile information, whereas other parts of the world don't always have those kinds of extensive profiles. And I think, yeah, sometimes that's not, you don't always realize until, like you say, your children are here and maybe asking questions and you can refer back to those profiles. And we've certainly done that, my wife and I, when our kids are very similar age, or a little bit older than Blair, but when, you know, the questions come, you do have something to refer to. And has your husband been involved in those conversations and things?
Yeah. Yes, that was amazing. So we went back to Parent Hub, listened to Avita Pellman.
Yeah, good old Dr. Pellman, Yeah.
And the age groups, and because we're like, okay, Blair's within this age group, let's re-listen to it. And I had listened to it, and so we listened to it together. But I found out I had to ditch the younger groups and go to
the older ones.
Yeah.
Nine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's asking intense questions. Okay. And so I had to go to that one. We listened to it together. And after that, he wanted to see the profile. And he was like, this is amazing. He really liked what he read and saw. Wow. And I was like, I was quiet, but in my head, I was like, I needed somebody like
big moment.
Yeah.
For him to take it in. But he was like, this is amazing. Because we had, you know, a lot of the education there. So he could see the similarity. He could see it all. And he was very much happy. And he actually told me, like, you chose a good donor.
Oh, yeah. And I think just for some context for people listening to this, a queer is referring to, so on Path to Parenthood, because a queer is a Path to Parenthood community member, we have the Talking Together series, which is with Dr. Avi Pearlman, who is an amazing child psychologist. And we actually have content and support for parents with different age categories, and talking to your child about donor conception and within the different developmental ages and milestones. But as Aquia said, obviously Blair's ahead of the game there, and Avi talks about that, doesn't she, in those webinars, that actually your child might be 4 or 5, but actually they may be asking super curious questions of like a preteen. And so yeah, like, it's great to hear actually that, because we put this information out, don't we, Becky, and it's so lovely to have the feedback that it was really helpful to you and your husband.
I just love hearing that you, like, obviously we're in the UK, you're over in the US, and you're sat there with your husband and you're going, right, we need to navigate this now. Let's dig into this content and watch it together. And that led to him to want to know that, take that next step, because that is a big thing. You're having to let in this third person. And it sounds like, I think at the beginning, very much like myself, there's a very much a feeling of being threatened by the thought that there's someone else. And so keeping arm's length and probably was what helped him move through that.
Yeah.
But you get to the point where you have your children and suddenly you then feel more curious and maybe very much grateful for what they did. And it's amazing how a person can shift through those things. And I think we heard that in an earlier episode of this series with Christina, who talked about how she felt at the point of going down the egg donation route to how she felt then as a parent. But yeah, it makes me so happy thinking about having created Paths to Parent Hub that is helping in those really important moments, not just you, but also your husband as well. So yeah, thank you for sharing that.
It's amazing, Becky and Haley, what you guys are doing is amazing. There's nothing out there like this. And for me, it's my comfort. I know you guys don't even talk about surrogacy, but I was talking to somebody about surrogacy yesterday, and I said, there's a group I'm actually part of, and you might want to consider listening to why it's important to share just in general.
Yeah.
About surrogacy. And so by the time we were done with the conversation, I given her books and I was like, but you can, I encourage you to listen to get on Path to Parenthood. Yours is not donor, yours is surrogacy, but I think there's a part or two that you would find beneficial about the importance of sharing. And I actually highlighted your Instagram post about the poll you did. And I think you had over 89% or something say they should.
I think it was 80% that said you should, 13% said they were on the fence, and 7% said there's no need to tell. So it's actually tonight. So the day that we're recording this evening, we've got our webinar, Why Telling Matters. And if you're listening to this afterwards, you'll be able to get the link to watch that back. But we've got, I think, 600 signed up now, which I think just really shows the scale of the gap in resource around this. And it's, I suppose, listening to stories like yours, I think for people who are in that space of whether they're on the fence or whether they're deciding not to, it's hearing, if you can see it, you can be it, as Julianne always says. If you can see that other people have managed to navigate this, and you've got lots of different elements to the stories of how your children came to be, but make it into one big family story, it can be beautiful. It can be something you're really proud of, despite all of the complexities and things that you had to go through. But just moving on to, obviously, you were about to get to the surrogacy part. So obviously, Blair is here. You've decided that you're going to go down this route. Obviously, it's very, very expensive. How did you kind of take those next steps? And yeah, the story of your other two girls.
Yeah. So, in talking to that lady, she was like, I mean, at this time, this was pre-COVID, right? 2019. So the world is about to turn and surrogates were really already scarce. And she said, I would say, just put it out there. Tell everybody that you need a surrogate. That's one way to find a surrogate, through your own connections and networks. And I said, okay, so I took her advice. And like I said, anyone that visited me, I would narrate my story, regardless of if they solicited for it or not. And with, so I do need a surrogate. And a lot of people would look at me like, are you serious? Because nobody has ever heard someone ask them for a surrogate, or let alone even talked about it. So some of my friends, it's like, are you joking? And it's like, no, I'm serious. This is what I need. If you know of anybody, let me know and we can talk and stuff. And so I basically started telling everybody, including my own immediate family members. And it was then that my sister told me, oh, one of my, her elementary school buddies. So one of their friends from the elementary school class told them about another friend. They were all friends in elementary school, and said, oh, I saw on Instagram that she had posted that she was grateful to have been a blessing to her family as a surrogate. And so when my sister told me, I knew the girl, but I hadn't spoken to her in over 20 years. So I went on Instagram. I wasn't on Instagram. I created my Instagram account specifically just to look for this lady. And I got her and I told her I'd like to talk to her. And so we had our first phone conversation in over 20 years. and told her what had happened to me. And she had just delivered twins a week before my conversation with her. So clearly her head is not in that space of, I'm doing this again. So it was like, yeah, I don't know, but let's talk in some few months. And for me, it was like, okay, this seems like a done deal, because why not? You are in the space, you want to help, you liked hearing, you know, she was sad for me to hear what had happened. And I felt an instant reconnection to her. It was so amazing. Like, I just felt the instant, and in my mind flashed back to their childhood of seeing them playing Barbie dolls in my house together. So this wasn't your typical surrogacy story of here in America, where you're paying somebody and that's the only relationship you have, is you're paying them. This was deeper, because we grew up together, so to speak, even though we hadn't been in touch, I knew her family. She knew mine. So I was quite torn, knowing that we had a deep connection, what it meant for family, her family, and my family. My family is pretty easygoing. I knew that they would accept it instantly, but I didn't know her family. And I never spoke to her mom and dad. I just spoke purely to her, because I was just dealing with her, and she's a grown adult. And we talked about that, and she, you know, told me not to worry. But I remember reaching back out, because she told me 3 months. So it's like April, May, June, July, August. And I did reach out in 3 months and say, so what do you think? And she said, yes, absolutely. I'd love to. However, give me, I think it was another couple of months. And so we came to the agreement that October timeframe of the same year that she had the baby would be a good time to start. This was COVID time.
Wow. Okay, so you did all that as well on top, yeah, just to add into the mix of, complexities.
COVID time. We started the journey pre-COVID.
Yeah.
But didn't get to transfer till COVID, because you're talking about it could last up to 6 months even when you have somebody to get through the process from clearance. And so we met, and then we went for embryo transfer the following day. And so me and my GC went back to live our lives, because she had to fly back. And I say this lady was really helpful, because in the midst of the journey was when my husband had a full diagnosis on him having cancer. And that was really hard for me to try and relate that to the GC without bringing any anxiety into her. And so this lady was the sounding board of how to communicate that to the GC. So she actually...
And when you say GC, just say it's gestational carrier.
Yes.
Just for anyone who's...
carrier. Yes. Yeah. She actually was one that relayed the message to the gestational carrier about what was going on, because I didn't know how to break that news to her without making her worried that she was going to be okay. And we were all going to be okay. So it was after that, when the lady relayed the message to her, that the GC reached out to me and said, are you okay? And, you know, then I felt I could talk more to her about. And then it became a point where, instead of me checking on the gestational carrier, she was the one checking on me, because I had a toddler. Then I had my husband that I was nursing back to health. And then I had another baby on the way.
Wow. Yeah.
Gosh, that's a lot to deal with.
And it was
COVID. And
COVID.
During COVID times as well. Wow. How did you and your husband kind of get through that? And how did it work with COVID and the birth? Because, I mean, I know here in the UK, there were lots of restrictions on who could be in the room and how that would all work. How did that work with you and the surrogate?
Well, I'll back up first to say that he kept telling me that if it hadn't been that we had the girls, he would have given up. He felt they were the reason why he fought so hard and was determined to fight to make it. He felt that, he kept saying, you know, without them, I felt like I would have said, I've lived my full life and it's okay for me to go. But knowing they're here makes me say, no, I want to be around for them and I'm going to be around. So they were his inspiration to fight and not give up.
Wow. And that's going from at the very beginning going, absolutely no, we're not going down this route, to right. then being his reason for living in that sense. Right.
And like I said, the surrogate lived in the West Coast. We lived in the East Coast. So when delivery, So we obviously had a delivery date. And while my husband was going through his treatment, he made all his doctors aware that he had a baby on the way and he was not going to miss the birth of the baby. So his treatment was planned around that timeline that we knew the baby would be born. And she ended up delivering at 36 weeks and a few days, which was a bit early. But again, the doctors had already factored in his treatments where he could pause and go for the delivery and come back. And that's exactly what happened. We got a call after she went for her 36-week appointment saying, we're going to keep her here because blood pressure keeps rising. We just want to monitor and see, but we might induce. And this was, the GC was phenomenal in communicating all of this to us. And so 2 days after she had been in the hospital, they were like induction, and her being experienced and knowing her body, she was like, okay, you guys have 16 hours to be here. The baby will be here.
Wow. Did you make it? Did you get across in time?
We did. I had packed my bags for 3 months.
Yeah, you're waiting and ready. Oh, bless you.
Yeah.
Oh.
But when we got the call, I unpacked the bags and packed it all up again.
Yeah. Oh. So you had your second baby. And I was just saying, because there is more to your story, isn't there? Because you actually went on to have a third child, didn't you?
Yes.
Was that with the same surrogate or was that with another surrogate?
We had the third child through another surrogate.
Yeah.
And again, this was my husband asking for.
Amazing. Wow. So he was the driving force. So in his treatment was obviously successful with it, with the cancer treatment and everything. I can't get over how much you've been through. As you're telling the story and then throwing in COVID on top, it's just so much to kind of, like, even just logistically, isn't it? Just the travel, the kind of...
Never mind emotionally.
Yeah, exactly. And then the health and the emotional. So you've been through so much. And I mean, we've spoken for a few years, haven't we, over online. And I know bits of your story, but it's been so fascinating to kind of go in depth a little bit about the journey your husband and yourself have gone through, and to have your amazing little family. Yeah, it's just amazing. And
I would love to maybe to round off just to hear about how you are communicating your family story to your children, because they've all got a slightly different story. And are you still in touch with the surrogates, and what are your thoughts in the future around making contact with the donor as well? I'd just love to hear about how you've handled those conversations.
Oh, so, I mean, books are always an amazing way to start, right? And I was sharing this with somebody. I was like, so books help you rehearse your story. And so being part of Path to Parenthood, like, I cannot stress enough how amazing it has been. Becky, we did a book club. It's an orange cover. Can't remember his name now. But he was talking about how environment was so important to, you know, so you can raise a kid that's not genetically athletic, but can be an athletic because you put him in that environment. I can't remember his name, but I do have the book right by my bedside. And it's amazing. It just escaped me who he was. And so we read that book together. We talked about it in great length. And I think it was after that, we had already started telling the kids by this time. Blair was right about 2 when her sibling was born. And that's when I came in also in contact with you guys. And so we had started talking, but then I got to personally know Happy together. And I got her book and I got the coloring sheets for Blair. And using all of that plus the book we had read was so helpful to say, this is very important that we share and create the environment of sharing for them. And so it led me to use Sensitive Matters to create the personalized books for them. And I remember doing that as their Christmas, part of their Christmas gifts. And just using that to talk to them and share with them. And it became just a normal thing to the point where anytime we had a new nanny, one of the books that the kids would give the nanny was to give them that book and say, here, read me that book. And then they would read it and look at me and have a lot of like, is this a fiction or is this real?
Really?
Yeah. This is real, it's not fiction, you know. And it also made me always talk to my nannies about, you know, our family and why. And not why, but, you know, this is who we are. And so you hear a lot of words these kids use that most kids their age would not. So that was how we did a lot of, we did a lot of reading. The dad would do the same to talk to them about their story. And then Blair took it to the next level of telling her class about how her siblings came to be. You know, you take family pictures to class. It's kind of like a little show and tell that's 4-year-olds. And so she took pictures, and the first picture she pulled out was of her and her sister surrogate. Amazing. And she said, this is me and my sister surrogate. And she showed everybody. And the teacher said, oh, what's a surrogate? And she said, well, she helped my mom. You know, she helped us carry my sister Hunter. And she asked, where's her name? And, you know, it became a whole conversation. And we used it as a very little education session, the teacher did, to tell kids about alternative paths to parenthood.
It's amazing. It's great that you had that support as well. I remember when you told me, and I think you, did you do a post, I think, online about it at the time? It was amazing. Just, I think I saw a little picture of Blair proudly holding the picture.
Everybody. And so it's been amazing to share with them enough. And also then they've also got to meet. We couldn't meet Sloan's surrogate because it was COVID. But we do keep in touch. We do keep in touch with all our surrogates. And during the pregnancies, we always had video calls, especially with Sloan's surrogate because it was COVID. So we could not physically see her. And Blair was always in the phone calls, the video calls we did with them, with me and my husband. We always were, you know, as a family, talking to her. So we have lots of clips of us having those conversations. But with Hunter, it was post-COVID, right? So we actually physically met, went to see her. We had brunch and with her. We had a photo shoot with her. And the entire time, Blair, I was narrating this to someone. I was like, it was so weird. She knew exactly what was happening. She was glued to that surrogate and was, her hands was on her belly the entire time we were with her.
Yeah. It's just incredible what children can take in, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think just her seeing that process will have brought it to life. And I think what's really great to hear as well is it's your story, when you've shared it with your children, you've not just focused on the surrogacy part. You've also focused on the donor conception part. Because I think we've heard experiences where actually the donor part is minimized and it's been more about the surrogacy journey, when actually both have brought them into the world. Excellent. And are really, really important. And it sounds like you are very open and outside of just within your family. And just in terms of your community and kind of from a religious standpoint as well, have you come across any challenges there? How have you shared this outside of your family with others?
So when the kids were born, obviously based on our religious faith, I wanted them to be baptized. And so I quickly just told the pastor, I was like, so, well, with Blair, I didn't say anything to him at that very moment when she was born. But after the baptism, I was like, so remember the baby you baptized? She was sperm donor conceived. And he was like, wow, what? And I was like, yeah. And I said, I withheld that from you because I wanted you to see, when you look back, now you know, does she look any different from another human, another baby? Right? There was nothing to tell you that this child is weird or different, or she looked just like another baby you'd always baptize. And he was like, you're right. And so I think they were actually intrigued by it, because he'd said it flat out. He's like, I've never met anybody that has gone through this. But I think it was important for me to talk about it after the fact to avoid the preconceived notions of what you think a donor-conceived child looks like, or a family, how a family, a donor-conceived family would look like, a child born through, you know, and to see that we were just like the next family down the street. Nothing different. There was no way anyone can tell, you know. And so I think that shattered that preconceived notion that these kids might be weird, or, you know, they've watched them grow and seen them on Instagram, and we still go to church from time to time, and they've seen, and they're like, this is great. And actually, when Sloan was born through surrogacy, which again, I told them, they were like, can you educate people about this? Because we never knew about this. We've heard about it, but I don't. And he was very honest. He said, but I don't know anything or enough about it. And I said, oh, absolutely. So I put together a seminar, and I brought my fertility doctor on so we could talk about infertility and how the church could be part of that process.
That's amazing. And
through that, when people are having challenges, even people that are not in the church, about last year, I got a call from a lady. We exchanged text message. She got my number from an older lady, an older generation lady, saying, we have this church member that went through surrogacy, and since your daughter has gone through a massive loss and cannot carry again, you two can connect.
Yeah.
So this
the power of story sharing.
So this older lady was able to connect her friend's daughter to me, and they're also now going through their surrogacy journey. I haven't even seen this older lady in, I don't know, years, but she remembered.
It stayed with her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it's so important to share. And that's why I also share, is to make people aware, because I had heard, like I said, about surrogacy, but had no idea. And I only thought it was something celebrities could do.
Yeah.
And find out, no, we all can do it.
Yeah. But often people don't necessarily share it in the way that you have. And just finally, you touched on the fact that when you were looking for a donor, there were no black donors. Well, there was very, very few black donors. And I know through the work I've been doing in this space, and I always want to make sure that representation is so important, and making sure that people can see people like them who have been down this journey. And I have struggled so much to find people from the black community that have had this experience that are willing to share. And I think you are one of the rare ones who has put themselves forward. But I would always want to call out, if anybody else wants to share their story in the way that you have, I think it is so powerful. Because like you say, if you can see it, you can be it. You can connect with someone, and you can feel, it's that feeling of not feeling alone. You're not the only one in your community that is going through this. But I don't know whether you've got any reflections on the lack of voices that we're hearing from the black community, and whether there's anything we can do to try and help people to share more.
Oh, well, thank you for asking that. For me, I think I get texts very often about, thank you for sharing your story. It encouraged me. I'm actually going to this one that came probably a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling my sister about it. I'll tell you exactly what she said. And it was just, when I saw that, I said, this is why I need to continue to share. Even when I'm feeling overwhelmed and tired, because three kids is a lot.
Yes, to put it mildly.
Especially when they're all 2 years apart.
I was going to say, they're quite close in age, aren't they, as well?
She said, you inspired me in so many ways. God bless you, and thank you in caps.
Yeah.
That's all I yes. just
yeah.
could ask for, is to know that my story inspired, and she has her baby through surrogacy after 17 years.
Wow.
Today.
Gosh. Yeah.
So how can you encourage people? I think just you all just talking about it more and saying there is a huge lack, and we just wish people could come forward. And I also do the same when I share with people and they're successful. I tell them, I would just love for you to carry on this down the line. I also encourage you guys to keep talking about it, to say we do need representation. Does matter.
It really matters.
It yeah. really matters. And so you are also highlighting it. I think we're raising awareness that sometimes people are not aware, especially the lack of donors in that space. It's something that people are not aware until you are in need of it.
Yeah, but absolutely.
I think talking about it more will bring it to the forefront.
Yeah.
What can we do? Highlight families of how it's been a blessing.
Yeah.
The likes of our families, you know, how it's been a blessing. Highlighting me, us, for me, it's enough to for people to see. And donor conception is very complex, as we know.
Yeah.
But looking at how it's been a blessing to people yeah. is very important. And I think yeah. if we could show that to also, it takes away the stigma. There is nothing wrong. They're just like your next door neighbor. You just yeah. didn't know the details.
Exactly. And I think what you said there is so important. Yeah. With, I think if you're listening to this and you're thinking that my story needs representing, then please do get in touch, because we would love to hear you. And you don't even have to share it on a public podcast like this. You can share it within the Paths to Parent Hub community, because the power of story sharing, I always love the quote, and I say it so many times, that shame dies when stories are told in safe spaces. And that's what it's all about. And seeing the impact that your story has had, and thinking about all of the people out there who may be feeling very, very alone on this journey, I think your story matters and it should be told. So yeah, do get in touch if you did want to share. Thank you so much. If you're enjoying the podcast conversations, you can find even more as part of the Paths to Parent Hub membership community.
We know that navigating donor conception and alternative paths to parenthood can feel overwhelming, isolating, and let's be honest, a bit scary at times.
And that's exactly why we created Paths to Parent Hub. It's a safe, supportive space for people on donor conception journeys, whether you're at the beginning, trying to decide, going through treatment, or already a parent.
Inside the hub, you'll find over 90 hours of on-demand expert webinars, honest real-life stories, monthly opportunities to ask questions of our resident psychologists, private support groups, and a community of people who really get it.
We're here to support parents and parents-to-be so they're in the best possible position to support their future children with confidence and openness.
So if you're looking for guidance, connection, and compassion, come join us at paths2parenthub.com.
Because every path matters. We'd love to welcome you there. A huge thank you to TV Edwards for supporting this episode. TV Edwards are a top-ranked, award-winning law firm named in the Times Best Law Firms 2025. Their family law department is ranked among the UK's top 20 and known for their expertise in family law with a compassionate, client-focused approach.
They lead in modern family law, supporting clients through surrogacy, donation, and co-parenting. Their solicitors have shaped landmark cases for many diverse families.
And with TV Edwards, families gain more than legal support. They find a trusted partner for their journey ahead.
Becky and I are so grateful to be supported this season by TV Edwards solicitors. And we're thrilled to welcome family law solicitor Anis Mathias to the Path to Parenthood podcast. Throughout this series, Anis will be joining us to answer some of the most common legal questions we hear from our community around donor conception, surrogacy, and modern family building. We are excited to be bringing you those all important lived experience stories, but this time alongside the legal insight, because we know how valuable it is to hear both. So enough from me, let's get into this week's legal question. So today we've heard from the lovely Aquia, who actually used sperm donation and surrogacy in order to build her family. And I thought it'd be a great opportunity, while we have Anis here again, our legal expert, to talk around parental orders and why Anest, why are they necessary for intended parents engaging in UK-based surrogacy? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So the woman who carries a child is the child's legal mother. So at birth, the surrogate will be the mother of the child, regardless of genetics or, in fact, where the child was born. And if the surrogate was married or in a civil partnership at the time that conception took place, then her spouse could also be the child's legal parent. A parental order is an order which transfers the parenthood from the surrogate and possibly her spouse to the intended parent or intended parents. And that then means that the child is to be treated in law as the child of the intended parents.
And is that the same as if somebody has gone and used surrogacy overseas, maybe in the US? Is a parental order still required if they are, say, living in the UK?
Yes, there's no international recognition of surrogacy, and people have looked at conventions, but it's rather a complicated subject with people having different views on it. But even if you have a birth certificate in the US, that birth certificate isn't recognised over here. And there's been quite a few parents who have been caught out by not applying for parental orders at the time that they should have applied, and they've had to apply later on in the child's life, but you would still need to apply for a parental order.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful to know, because I think, like you say, if you did go overseas and think, oh, I've got the birth certificate of the child and we're both named on the birth certificate as is the intended parents, and then came back over to the UK, like you say, it may be something that you only realise further down the line. I think it just reiterates the importance of having kind of some legal input, even if you are going overseas to use surrogacy, have some legal input in the country in which you reside and where you intend to raise your family. So thank you once again, Anest, for your amazing legal insight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please do take a moment to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget our free resources, including our recent webinar, Why Telling Matters, our friends and family resource, and lots more via our website.
So do come and join us in the Paths to Parenthood membership. We'd love to see you there.
Until next time.